for extreme times. This is A View from Space with the Spaceman on Talk Radio AM 640.
I'm the guy we call the Spaceman. This is A View from Space. I'd like to welcome you in if you're driving around town tonight listening to AM 640. I welcome you in. Or maybe you're at work listening to the show on the AM 640 app. I welcome you in, too, if you're doing that. Or if you're listening to me right now on Shaw Direct on Channel 865, picking up the show that way, I welcome you in. Or if you're listening to me on your 3 or 4G personal communication device via the Stream the World software, and now available free on Apple Music, I welcome you in also. Or maybe you're what some call the best seat in the house, sitting in front of your Mac, your PC, logged on at home to 640toronto.com, picking up the live audio streaming there. I welcome you in wherever you are in the world. I welcome you in. This weekend is not like any other weekend in the year. The cycle of the sun. After all, the world, the movers and shakers that direct our world, adjust our world, change our world, the Illuminati are, these guys are up to their biggest tricks. Why this time of year? Because at Halloween, actually Samhain, in the ancient times, was known as a time when the veil between the physical world, ours, the third dimension, and the spirit world is the thinnest, when it's easiest to cross over to the other side and back, which means the spirits can come in a lot easier at this time of year. One of my emailers, P.S., from down in the States, writes, Space, I can't believe what I've seen that is happening. The term black moon, never heard of it before, seems to be the same as the blue moon, except this new moon happens during October 31st this year. Lilith is in this somewhere, which is the female version of Satan. This new moon is to be followed to be the second supermoon, November 14th. It'll be in Taurus, 22nd degree. And this just happens to be the evil star known as Algol, also known as the demon star. All of this was preceded by none other than the September 1st solar eclipse, known as the Ring of Fire. The sun worshippers believe that what happens down here is reflected above in the heavens. I just told you, my emailer from the United States just caught you up on what's happening in the heavens this weekend. It's also the weekend that showcased the first game, the baseball game, the Masonic game. MLB put on their show Friday night, bringing back the World Series that hasn't happened in 71 years in Chicago at Wrigley Field. Because of the curse of the goat, who is Baphomet, carefully coded into the Billy Sienas legend, which could possibly be broken this year. Not only that yesterday was happening, but also the fire. The sun, you see, has a representative down here on Earth that the pagans use, the sun worshippers use, and it's fire. On the runways of America, two of them, one in Chicago, one in Fort Lauderdale, airplanes on fire, flames leaping out of both of these aircraft. On the tarmac of American airports, Fort Lauderdale in Chicago, Illinois. So, that's not the big story. Because I was waiting for it. the big story. And it arrived yesterday. It's here. Along with that spiritual attack yesterday on America with the flaming aircraft on the runway and the Cubs losing game three. Why is that important? Game three, the winner of game three in World Series play goes on to win the championship 70% of the time. So the October surprise, what I was waiting for, happened. Out of nowhere, left field, the FBI comes out and says they're starting a new investigation on Hillary Clinton's emails on a private server. This comes exactly 11 days before the election. Now 10. New investigation involves a top aide of Hillary Clinton's, Huma Abedin. Of course, you all know about, every single person knows about this woman now. She's the former wife, of course, of Anthony Weiner, who is under investigation for sexting a minor, supposedly. That's the official story. You see, there were 13 devices originally back in, I believe it was July, that the email server came up at the start of the campaign, really. 13 devices that were receiving emails and contact on that private server. Huma Abedin, her telephone, herself was never seized, never looked at. There are 13 other devices. So supposedly the official story goes, while they were checking out this sexting of a minor, they come across Huma Abedin talking to her husband and a connection to the Clinton server and possibly emails. So the FBI says they're not exactly sure what they have here, but it warrants an investigation, and they thought they'd announce it now, and everybody thought, well, the timing is kind of peculiar. It's the October surprise! It's supposed to be this way. They were waiting for this. They have an email that has to do with the 2012 Benghazi attack. I believe that's what it's going to be. More on that in just a few moments. But this whole campaign has been involving sex and sex only. Sex is what led to this new pall that's come over America, dragging down the American election to its lowest level ever all time. This thickening black cloud of debauchery is hovering over the U.S. presidential election, and it comes just 11 days, 11 days, as I just mentioned, 11 is the number of destruction for Hillary Clinton for this October surprise. September 11th, if you'll remember, Clinton collapses at the September 11th World Trade Center commemoration. Again, the date, September 11, 11 days before the election, this is now released. Now, with just 11 days to go before the election, it can never be completed, these emails, thousands of them to go through. Or couldn't a bot do it in about 10 seconds? Of course it can. Of course it can. But they want to play this out because it's going to be hanging like a pall over the entire next 11 days or 10 days now, all 9 now, really, as we get into the evening of the 10th day. It is just incredible that this October surprise would appear. I thought it would be closer to the election because I was waiting for it. I'll tell you what else I expect coming up next on Talk Radio AM 640. I'm the Spaceman. This is A View from Space, and I'm just getting started. I'm a guy to call space. It's a view from space. Talk radio, AM 640. Communicate by email only. Two addresses, spaceman at 640toronto.com and space at 640toronto.com. And as I tell you every night that I'm on, they start rolling in before the show even begins. So as I was saying, this is So-En. We're approaching the time where the veil between the spirit world and the physical world is the thinnest, and it's the easiest to jump into the other realm. Well, you can tell the demons have jumped out on this Halloween weekend. I've been waiting for it. It's the October surprise, which are, well, possible charges that are coming to Hillary Clinton, a person who is running for the presidency of the United States of America. Anyone that's about to be indicted by a federal jury cannot possibly run. I thought possibly this was going to come up when this campaign first started coming on, before the FBI jumped in, I believe it was July, and nixed it, said, oh, there's nothing to see here. I thought, well, that's strange, because I thought they had that in their back pocket. Well, they do. It's the October surprise. And not only that, but this whole thing comes 11 days to go before the election. And I remind you, 11 is the number of destruction. September 11th, it was telegraphed then at the commemoration of the World Trade Center towers. Hillary Clinton collapses on the 11th. And collapses again on the 11 days before the election. So, a person who is a possible candidate for indictment, can they run for the presidential office? I thought maybe way back in June or so, July, just before that first email hit with the FBI, that she would have to step down and Joe Biden would be recruited to run in her place at short notice. And this is how they'll slip their guy in, the Republicans, Donald Trump, because Donald Trump was sitting down with the leaders. This is what really happened. This is the real conversation. He sat down with the leaders of the Republican Party, and they said, Donnie, just keep dishing the slop. Keep doing it. Don't ever once, we don't want to ever see you once, act like a politician. Ever. And we'll have all of our people clamoring to get you the hell out so that you can position yourself to the people as a non-politician and somebody who's going to go in and do change when in fact you're going to be working for us. And that's what has happened. They've kept it on a very low base topic. One topic only. Sex. Isn't it strange that the most, well, reprobate statesman, former Senator Anthony Weiner, is all about his sexual activity is going to bring down the woman who has been claiming that Donald Trump is the sexist and the groper the whole campaign? And, of course, it's all a distraction, so they don't have to talk about the United States government shutting down December 9th and having to borrow more money to keep going. They're already in trillions and trillions of dollars debt. Right? And then they have three more possible U.S. Supreme Court judges that are going to be named, which is going to form the laws in the next 40 years, the next four decades in America. Affirmative action is coming up. Gun control is coming up. Do you think for a moment the movers and shakers in this world are going to put someone they didn't want into the White House to pick those people that are going to pick those laws and the exact wording of those laws? No, 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 no. This is all staged. You're watching a show. 11 days to go. It's telegraphed. The FBI comes out and says that they're opening the investigation to the emails of Hillary Clinton. The usual law is that the FBI does not ever, ever, and this is what Hillary Clinton meant, which is unprecedented, she said, they never interfere with an election within the last 60 days of the election. We get into the last 2 months of the election, they leave it alone. But this time, they jumped into the fray. So the story goes, the FBI director, Comey, who is being directed, yes, the director is being directed, wasn't his choice. He went to the attorney general, who is a woman, who washed her hands of the whole thing and said, no, 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 we're not going to open the investigation. But he says, I've got some stuff here that is detrimental to the election, and it could sway it. And the people in America should know about it. Blah, 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 blah. In actual fact, what it is a takedown. So the attorney general is supposed to do it this way. The FBI goes to the attorney general. The attorney general says, okay, you have enough evidence here. But the female attorney general said, no, I'm not touching this. She would have appointed a prosecutor, and that prosecutor would have then laid the charges. But the attorney general refused to do it, and we're told that she was mad. Yes, there's a fight between man and woman. Guess what else is new? So the man wins. And they have a man, a reprobate man, who has disgraced himself through sex, supplying the evidence to bring down Hillary Clinton, the woman running for office. Because you see, the Illuminati are sun worshippers, and the sun worshippers are druidic druids. You'll learn about the druids tonight on this show, a little deeper in. But they have the sun as God. And in the two equinoxes, the spring equinox, the woman takes charge. In the fall equinox, the man takes charge. We've just had the fall equinox. Man is in charge. That's why you see the two men overlording the women. The male FBI goes to the female attorney general and says, hey, look at this. She goes, no. He goes, yeah, well then, I'll do it myself. And so he went out to the public without a prosecutor and said, hey, I'm opening up this investigation. They're sitting on an email. I'll tell you what I think it is coming up. It's serious. Serious enough, he says, that he had to do it himself. That's unheard of. It's never been done before. But Comey did it because he was put up to it. You see, there's a war going on here in high places, awfully high places. It's the Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, banking war, who are in it together, but have decided to fight one another to cause the chaos, to create the change. A change is coming to America. A change is coming to the world. The U.S. election is already decided by the Illuminists, the highest ranking. And you're just a spectator watching the show. Remember the first, one of the most famous, no, it wasn't the first, the most famous October surprise, the Iran hostage crisis, diplomatic crisis between Iran and the States, 52 American diplomats, citizens held hostage in Iran for 444 days. After a group of Iranian students, one of them, Ahmadinejad, who ended up being the prime minister, he was going to college in those times. He was a college student. Belonged to the Muslim student followers of the Imam's line, who supported the Iranian revolution. They took over the U.S. embassy in Tehran and captured 52 American diplomats. The crisis was described by the Western media as an entanglement of vengeance and mutual incomprehension. But basically what it was is the West going in and taking Pahlavi out, the Shah of Iran that was West, pro-West, and putting in, are you ready? Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini, a Muslim leader, a cleric, so that they could build this war between the Muslims and the Christians and Jews for the Third World War. And it's coming. That's going to be the reason for the war. It'll be an ideological war. Well, the start of that happened with the Iranian hostage taking, the Iran hostage crisis, as they call it now. The October surprises, it turned out to be, because you see, that crisis reached a climax. After failed efforts to negotiate the hostages' release, the U.S. military attempted a rescue operation, which was Jimmy Carter running for office in the States for the presidency, running against Ronald Reagan and his vice president, on the same ticket was the former CIA head, George Herbert Walker Bush. So, the crisis reaches a climax. More next on Talk Radio AM 640. On the October surprise, the Iran hostage crisis, one of the big ones of all time. And this one that happened this Friday just may top it. Space, Talk Radio AM 640. I'm the guy they call Spaceman. This is Talk Radio AM 640. Communicate by email only. Spaceman at 640toronto.com is one of the addresses. The other one is space at 640toronto.com. Talking about one of the biggest, most momentous October surprises that often accompany an American election. The Iranian hostage crisis, 444 days, 52 Americans held hostage in the U.S. Embassy in Tehran, from 1979, November 4th of 79, all the way to January 20th, 1981, held hostage, couldn't get them out. So the election is looming. Jimmy Carter, the incumbent in office trying to keep his job, sends the U.S. military to do a rescue operation using ships, including the USS Nimitz and the USS Coral Sea that were patrolling the waters near Iran. In April of 1980, the attempt known as Operation Eagle Claw was launched and failed, resulting in the deaths of 8 American servicemen and 1 Iranian civilian, as well as the destruction of a couple of aircraft, helicopters. They actually tried to land in the desert, and the sand got into the motors and stalled the aircraft, and they fell to the desert floor. Can you imagine how weird that sounds? When their job is to be in that sandy area, the Marines that were sent there, these servicemen know about dust and dust storms, but no, they failed. Something happened. The official story is that sand got in and did it, but it all came crashing down, and Jimmy Carter's attempt to rescue the 52 Americans failed miserably. So, Ronald Reagan, with his running mate, George Herbert Walker Bush, who was the CIA head, has connections in Iran, did a deal and got them out. And guess what? The hostages formally released in the United States custody the day after the signing of the Algiers Accords, just minutes after the new American president, Ronald Reagan, who was touted as a hero for getting them out or starting to go negotiation to get them out, was sworn into office. Just minutes after. The crisis, of course, considered the pivotal episode in history of the Iranian-United States relations, which gets us where we are today, and they cite this as a major factor in the trajectory of Jimmy Carter's presidency and his loss in the 1980 presidential election to Ronald Reagan, who did the deal with his ex-CIA head running on the same ticket, George Herbert Walker Bush. So that was the Iranian hostage crisis. Clinton's in trouble with the 2012 Benghazi attack, I believe. That's that coordinated attack against two U.S. government facilities in Benghazi in Libya by members of the Islamic Militant Group in September of 2012. Do you know what the date was of that attack? September. You know I'm going to say it. 11/2012. The Islamic Militant Group attacked the American diplomatic compound of Benghazi and killed U.S. Ambassador J. Christopher Stevens, U.S. Foreign Service Information Management Officer Sean Smith, two CIA contractors, Tyrone Woods, Glenn Doherty, killed, and 10 others were wounded. I believe the email that they have is in concerning the 2012 Benghazi attack, when Hillary Clinton, on her private email service, Secretary of State then, running that show in Libya, was asked if they could possibly get the U.S. Embassy employees out of Libya, or at least give them some kind of protection, because there were no guards. They were left totally, completely alone, left hung out to dry in a world that was coming down around them. And Hillary Clinton, I believe they have an email that says, let them go. Let them die. Don't protect them. Don't evacuate. Stay where you are. Thinking possibly, and I'm not for sure on this, but thinking possibly, once Americans are killed, we'll get the backing to go into that Libya, and we'll be able to do whatever the hell we want, because now they've killed Americans. When they left them high and dry, she got off the computer and went to sleep. And that's what I believe they have. If that comes out, that is negligence of the highest level. Not protecting your own in a state of war in a foreign country. That's what I believe Comey and the rest of the other side on this gargantuan fight. I mean, there's multi-trillions on both sides. Don't kid yourself. This is a war of big, powerful people that we're witnessing here. As I said, what's in the offing? The American debt and new laws for America. That's what it's all about. That's why. Can you imagine, out on the campaign trail, Mr. Trump, who would you pick as the U.S. Supreme Court judge? Hillary, how are you going to get us, how are you going to pay down the debt? What's going to happen there? What are you going to do about the debt? Uh-oh. That's why sex got to take over. After all, we have a man and a woman. America's, you know, not that, the American electorate, the masses aren't that, I don't want to offend you if you're an American citizen, but you're not that swift, you know, a lot of them, a lot of the voters. And just vote from listening to the spin doctors on the Illuminati-controlled mass media. And I can see how it's easily, you know, you slip into that. But you've got to know there are the big players are playing in this game because there's a lot at stake. So I'm wondering if Hillary Clinton even has to step down or they're going to charge her after. Or are they just going to have it as a black cloud pall hanging over the next 10 days leading up to the election? Because, you see, I believe that the movers and shakers, the sun worshippers, are already having made that decision on who is going to be the next president of the United States. Now they just have to give you the right reasons to show you the numbers on their Illuminati-controlled mass media screens come election night on what the effect was. And people will sit back and go, oh, yeah, I can see that now because of that email thing. Or they can put in who they want, and they're going to. So the October surprise has happened. 11 days before the American election, the 2012 Benghazi attack was September 11th. Hillary Clinton collapses like the Twin Towers did at the commemoration this year at the Twin Towers site. The date again, September 11th. Now you know why. It was 11 days before the American election. Why does American election always fall on the first Tuesday following the first Monday in November? That next on Talk Radio AM 640. This is ABFS. I'm the guy to call space. This is View from Space. That's all it is. On Talk Radio, AM 640. Emails to spaceman@640toronto.com or space@640toronto.com. Thanks so much for the one that you've sent. I really appreciate it. I really do. Now, I pose the question, why is American election for their president always on a fixed date, first Tuesday, following the first Monday in November? Why? Why? Well, I partially let the cat out of the bag earlier in this hour when I told you it's all about Halloween and that thin, thin veil that separates the physical world with the spiritual world so that spirits can come through much easier at this time of year, when called upon, when the ritual is performed. And the American election date is taken directly from that precept. It's druidic. Druids. The druids are still running the world. When they dominated England, the druids were the executive. They were the government. They were the law. They were the policemen. They were the priests. They were everything. They held all the positions. Samhain is the real name of this holiday we call Halloween, which is really a religion. It's paganism. Halloween is part of a religion. Samhain is the guardian of the herds and the brother of the healer god, Tian. which is spelled just like Kane, only you have the I and the A juxtaposed. Now, Soen, guardian of the herds, brother of his healer god. Because, you see, Soen is a male deity worshipped in the fall, after the fall equinox. Samin looks after Kian's cattle, you see. Cattle were very important to the Celts in ancient times, as today, as a rancher, who were herding people. The Celts were herding people. Their livestock represented their wealth because the animals were the source of their food, source of their clothing. This culling of the herds, history, because you had to kill the animals in the fall, right, to put meat up for the winter. That's the basis for the reason why the date of the U.S. election is always the Tuesday following the first Monday in November. What's so special about that? Soen, Halloween, as it's called today, was the Druids' New Year's Eve. October 30th, going into the 31st. New Year's Day, the 31st. The first day of the new year. And it was only until 3 days after the most important night of Soen, New Year's Eve, that the people were then allowed to have fires again in their homes that had to be lit from the great bonfires that were built on the hills around all of the villages by the Druids. Come up, put your all of your fires out in your homes, come up, get a burning ember from us, carry it down, and light your flame for the new year. That was the ritual. Rolling down the hill with fire, still, is copied in some areas today. So in New Year's Eve, the people allowed to slaughter 3 days after this most important night of Soen, when the fires were relit from the bonfires on the hills. Exactly the same ritual takes place in modern-day Western world America on Election Day. Right after Halloween on leap years, the American electorate, the voters, are herded to the polls for the slaughter after Soen is celebrated. And that's why it's a fixed date on the first Tuesday following the first Monday in November, because October 31st, in ancient times with the Druids running it, 3 days without fire, 3 days without killing anything, then, after the celebration, the fires are lit, the slaughter begins to put the meat up for the winter to survive. Now you know why the American election is always the first Tuesday following the first Monday in November. Because they're following their religion. The Illuminati are following their religion. And to you, they've spun it to you like it's a fun thing that has candy involved and children. But all of the rest of it is deeply into the occult. So if it's a religion, how come it's not being banned? And there's talking about banning Halloween a few years ago, but it just has now become the most popular because of the spin, right? The spin doctors. The Illuminati-controlled mass media that brag up Halloween to be the best holiday, just the best holiday of them all. A lot of people even want it to change, and change that date to a date that's always on a Friday, so they can always party on their Friday. And have the whole rest of the weekend. This is the Halloween weekend. Monday is going to actually be Halloween Day. Christian choir is even banned in schools. What about Halloween? No, they said, we're just going to change it to Orange and Black Day. Some places in Western world here call it Orange and Black Day instead of Halloween. But if you ban Christian music because it's prophesizing a certain religion, which means you're trying to convince others to believe, recruit in that particular religion, So if you ban one religion, say Christianity, say the Muslims can't have prayer breaks in their school day, well then, since Halloween is a religion, then you must ban Halloween. It's very religious. In fact, the whole idea behind Halloween, correctly called Samhain, is religious. It's the new name devised to hide Halloween that they're using now, Black and Orange Day. But a lot of parents have become increasingly aware of what Halloween originally was and what it actually is, and that it is in fact a religion that's been adopted by New Age techniques and by, well, the curriculum and their schooling, the counseling programs, because of governmental intrusion. It's Spaceman on Talk Radio, AM 640. There's more right after this break. I'm a guy to call space. This is A View from Space on Talk Radio, AM 640. I communicate by email, spaceman@640toronto.com. The other address, space@640toronto.com, spaceman@640toronto.com. Now, the veil is the thinnest between the physical world and the spiritual world at this time of year. So in Halloween, as we call it today, it's a religion. I contend if you're banning other religions from schools, you can't go in and have Halloween in schools because it's a religion. Now, there are concerned parents that have banded together to battle school boards and administrators and lost, of course, because it doesn't matter what anyone thinks. It's what the movers and the shakers of the world, the Illuminati, the gods of this earth, want. And they want their religion front and center, and every other religion makes trouble. Halloween is part of a religion called paganism, which the Illuminati want to return to, with man as God. Some schools have also implemented policies prohibiting the celebrations of any holiday that is religious at all, in any nature. School that discontinues calling it their annual Christmas celebration now calls it the Winter Carnival. There's a lot of schools, Christian-oriented Christmas decorations are even disallowed. Christmas hymns dropped from the song lists because only secular Christmas songs are permitted. Then what about the Halloween parties? Shouldn't they be banned? The demonic, satanic decoration like witches, ghosts, goblins? They're a religion also. But the people controlling what goes on in your schools, goes on in the world, seem to be bent on defending the observance of their religion and their religious holidays, doesn't it? Say, Halloween, passed off as, the spin doctors grab it and go, merely fun, not having religious substance whatsoever. Yet, sordid occultic practices lurk under the cloak of the seemingly innocent traditional festival, Halloween, celebrated at the end of October every year. Because the end of October every year is the Druidic New Year. It's New Year's Day. The origin of this holiday can be traced thousands and thousands of years back, before the days of Christianity even, to the ancient Celts, many of today's. And the Celts, by the way, did not begin in the Western world. The Celts were ancient priests of sun worship in Egypt. In the Middle East is where the Celts began. So many of today's Halloween customs and traditions come from the Celts of what is now known as Ireland, Scotland, Wales, Northern France, and their priests, the Druids. The Druids believed that the people needed to be cleansed after they died. That was their belief. It still is their belief. The souls of the departed are then transferred by magic to the bodies of animals. During the night of October 31st,
enchanted souls are freed by the druidic god Soen, the god of dead, and taken together into the druid heaven. This festival was always accompanied by animal and sometimes human sacrifices linked with all kinds of magic. What do you think happened on Halloween night at Stonehenge for thousands of years? Not what you see today, just a few rocks piled on one another. No, it was a great Parthenon that was built. All made of solid rock, and you go inside, and the rocks were built and placed in such a way that the screams of the tortured victims of the human sacrifices would be echoing out and deafening. It was like a wall of martial amps at a music concert. And that's what Stonehenge was really all about. When that sun peeked through those stones, it was time to do the killing on the killing floor, with the echoes of the tortured, screaming human sacrifices completely audible for all to hear for miles around. Not to mention the ones that were at Stonehenge. What a crowd would have been there. That's a religion. And yet now, it's just candy and kids. So in spite of the coming of Christianity, this pagan festival continued to be observed until the 6th century. Why? How? Gregory the Great, the Roman Catholic Church Pope, advised the Archbishop of Canterbury in England to retain the practice of the Druidic sacrifices and celebrate them in honor of the Christian saints. In other words, change the label. Christian holidays were deliberately set at a time that had been sacred since the earliest pagan days. The Christians knew the power paganism had over the people, and usually renamed rather than reinvented holidays. They kept the pagan holiday because they worship it secretly underneath of the cleverly disguised Christian holiday as it is today. Halloween is strongly associated with goddess worship. It's a time when the summer goddess, the Great Mother, relinquishes her power to the winter god, the horned god. That, I believe, will also be reflected in the American election. The best known of all the feasts, Halloween, is looking in mirrors at midnight, bobbing for apples, the tree of knowledge and immortality, or eating them from strings which enacts the battle for life in death. It's a time of ghosts and weird stories. Like the Wiener emails. But as a pagan rite, it is the time when the dead and the living and the unborn children step outside the circle of time to meet, to talk, to exchange information, the Druids believe, and the Illuminati believe to this day, today, now, this second. The door of the circle is left open, and a place is laid with rich food and wine to be offered to the goddess when she joins her worshippers, who are her children. Basically, Halloween is a holiday that recognizes and tries to fix the sun's retreat. In pre-Christmas Christian times, rather, great bonfires, I told you at the start of the show, were lit to simulate the sun through imitative magic. When the Christians, the Roman Catholic Church actually, changed this autumn holiday to All Saints' Day, pagan the symbolism stayed, so October 31st has variously been called November Eve, Soen, or All Hallows' Eve, and today, just plain Halloween. Halloween's a day that witches celebrate above all other days. It is a festival of the dead and represents the ending of the beginning of the witch's year. It marks the beginning of the death and destruction associated with winter. At this time, the power of the underworld is unleashed. Spirits are supposedly freed to roam about the earth. It is considered the best time to contact spirits. That's why the American election is around that time. There's another religious group who are equally serious about its Halloween celebrations. They're the Satanists. Halloween to them is more of a sinister, more direct celebration of death and Satan. They celebrate it as one of the two highest holy days. On Halloween, the sacrifices of some of these satanic cults are unspeakably vicious and brutal, including a series of 6 weeks of rituals, including the slaughter of a small animal, like a cat or a bird, progressing through each week with a larger animal, such as a goat, then the murder of a small infant or child, until the final night when they ritually murder not only another child, but also an adult female. With the acceptance and even more the packaging and selling of the occult, including Satanism in television shows, movies, commercials, music videos, books, video games, inundating our society, don't you think we have a moral and ethical obligation to stop perpetrating this celebration of this pagan holiday to our children? Not to mention the love you have for them. More next. It's Talk Radio AM 640. I'm Space. This is a View from Space on Talk Radio AM 640. I'm Space. Emails to space at 640toronto.com or spaceman at 640toronto.com. Thank you so much for the one that you've sent. If you've got some information you'd like to pass along to me, or you got a critique of the show, or just like to say where in the world you're listening to AVFS from on Talk Radio AM 640, please use one of those two addresses. Thank you so much. Now, I just have one more thing to say. Adults and children. Children learn from adults. Children learn what we teach them, what we show them. Very impressionable. So, you're responsible for what goes into your child's head. But we've given that away to the schoolmasters. But you have control over a few things still with your child. Very few others. If you don't stop your children from participating in this demonic holiday, because that's where the roots lie, that's what it's about. You cannot change a leopard's spots. You are then, by your own compromising actions, implying to them, these young impressionable minds, it's okay to be involved with the things of darkness, and fear is fun. That's what you're implying. You are opening and advocating occult rituals worshipped by druids and are preparing the way for the occult age known as the Age of Aquarius, or known by another name as the New World Order and the new religion that's coming. That's our responsibility. I've told you where so in come from. October 31st, the day of ghosts, witches, goblins, and grotesque creatures. It's also a day of orange and black, of candles and jack-o'-lanterns, costume parties, strange customs occupy the minds of Western civilization, and fear is fun! And all of this seems to be intensifying every year. You know, I love it. In the motion picture business, they show you the most grotesque, the most degrading human deeds to another human. And yet, when someone gets mugged on a newscast, they'll say graphic images are coming up, so you're forewarned. And there's a guy punching him. Right. You've seen so much gore by the time you're 10 today. Now, children are lapping all of this up and are actually goaded into, pushed into, wearing every kind of costume imaginable and some unimaginable. Until they're off on their own and got the ritual down and start practicing it themselves and picking what they would like to wear. The girls usually like to wear some, well, risque things that they couldn't ordinarily get away with. So it pushes everything to the edge. And they go door to door, knocking on doors, getting free candy. What could be better? What a hook. Collect kids into this movement, into this religion. Collect bags full of candy. In the last few years, a lot of people have been decorating the yards, the cemeteries, making their houses look spooky, creating fear on the streets. Even churches have Halloween cemeteries. Really. And parties. And set up haunted houses as fundraising projects. Where did it all come from? What does it all mean? Most people would say, it's all harmless fun. Space. Hey, it's fun. Look at the origins. Look what it really means. And the meaning can't change. And the ones that are pushing it on you want it to be the religion out in the open. Some would venture to say, if there's any witchcraft in it, it's white witchcraft. In order to truly answer both of those questions, where did it come from and what does it mean, you got to go clearly back to the origin of it all, because the origin of it all tells you exactly what it really is. Just like I didn't know who my parents were, then I checked out and I finally know where I came from. I know what country we're from. And you identify with that. It's the origin. It can't be changed. You are a product of your experiences. Halloween has its origins in the British Isles, about 1,300 years ago, more. And in those days, there were many men and women who practiced the so-called nature religion known as Wicca. The word Wicca means wise ones. The word witch is taken from the word Wicca. The witches work their spells and magic as individuals or sometimes in groups. Known as covens. There are 12 members and the leader, 13. So each coven has 13 members. Sometimes the witches and wizards, as the males are called, work as a triumvirate or power of three. The female Wiccan known as a witch and the male Wiccan known as the wizard. And the word warlock was not used by witches to identify themselves. It actually is a Scotch Gaelic word that means traitor. Satanists use the word warlock. The Wiccans are worshippers of the Earth Mother, the sun, the moon, the stars, nature. Witches do not believe in Satan. The Wiccans or witches turn Satan into nature. Pan. The Wiccans or witches meet every Friday night, gather together called an Esbat. They draw a magic circle with a six-pointed star in it, the hexagram, the most dangerous symbol in all of witchcraft, the most powerful. That's where we get the word hex from. I put a hex on you, a spell. The Coven of 13 stands sky-clad or naked in the hexagram and works spells by chanting and doing rituals like drawing down the moon. The full moon, you see, sacred to witches. And the new moon, too, especially powerful. Especially if it's on a Friday. It's considered to be even greater if the Friday is the 13th day of the month. Halloween has now moved to a reverse 13, isn't it? The 31st. You see, there are 13 full moons in a year. Things happen on this earth at this time, like the Gulf War, too, started on the equinox. And then all combat operations declared ended on Beltane. The sun traveling around the wheel of life marks what happens here on the earth. Eight times each year, the witches celebrate the Sabbat in the ritual work and spell casting, as always done on the eve of the Sabbat. Sabbats are in bulk on February, spring equinox in March, Beltane in May, summer solstice June, Lunisad in July, fall equinox September, and October 31st, so in. And the winter solstice December 22, which is also known as Yule. That's the wheel of life that their god, the sun, circles. Witches have special ways of celebrating for each Sabbat, too, and even though they do not believe in Satan, it is Satan who gives them the experience they have and deceives them into thinking it's the forces of nature that they're tapping into. Halloween is the most important of the eight Sabbats in witchcraft. It's known as the Scottish Gaelic word Samhain in witchcraft. It's believed that on that night the barrier, as I said, between this world and the next, known as the astral plane, becomes very, very thin. And you can hop over to the other side much easier. The spirits can be jumping into our world much easier. The witches believe that this allows spirits of departed ones to travel freely back and forth between the earth and the spirit realm. So Halloween is the highest day in witchcraft. And on that night for many centuries, witches would work their magic and then have wild parties all through the darkness of that night. They would play games, such as bobbing for apples, because witches regard the apple as sacred. Knowledge. The apple represents knowledge of the occult, the Gnostic. The witches would also tell stories from their personal diaries of spells, known as their Book of Shadows. This and other ghost stories would start when the hosting high priest or priestess would say, "A witch's tale, a cup of ale, for the host of our guests unseen." Yes, in those early days in England, there was another kind of witchcraft. The Druids were called the Men of Oaks. That's next on Talk Radio, AM 640. It's a Spaceman. I'm a guy to call space. It's a view from space. Talk Radio, AM 640. Communicate by email, spaceman@640toronto.com or space@640toronto.com. Thank you for that one you sent. Thank you so much. So as I was saying before the break, the men of the oaks. The oak trees, you see, told no tales and have spirits. Oh, yes, and know and see all our witnesses to all of the human sacrifices made in the oak forests by the Druids. They were called the Oakmen. And as darkness set, October 31st, these governors, these policemen, these priests, because they ruled all those precincts, the clans of Druid men would put on their white robes and hoods. Then they would carry their sickles and Celtic crosses as they begin a torchlight procession through the streets of all of the villages. I'm about to tell you the origin of jack-o'-lantern. Got one on your front door? On your lawn, possibly? In your window, a little carved pumpkin. Yes, the jack-o'-lantern. At the beginning of the procession, you see, originally, which is where the origin of this jack-o'-lantern ritual that you're performing this weekend started, a male slave was killed by the Druids and dragged by a rope fastened to his left ankle, meaning the left-handed path, meaning the occult world. The Druids would walk until they came to a house or village, dragging this dead person by a tow line, fastened to his ankle. Drag it through the streets of the village where they shouted the equivalent of trick or treat. The treat, a slave girl, or any female to be given to the Druids out of the household that they knocked on. But the people refused to treat the Druids to a girl. Blood was taken from the dead slave, used to draw a hexagram, that six-pointed star, on the door or wall of the village. Spirits of the horned hunter of the night were invoked by the Druids to kill someone in that house later by fear that night. Mark the door and come back later. If this house or village gave a girl as a treat, they've knocked on our door. They've chosen us. Take her, and the rest live. Given to the sacrificial Druids. The Druids would put a pumpkin with a face carved in it in front of their door or gate of that place to say, hey, these people did well. And don't bother them anymore. They have contributed to the cause. Inside the pumpkin was a candle made of human tallow to keep evil spirits away. That jack-o'-lantern was a sign that you have cooperated with the Druids. The treats, or female victims, were taken to Stonehenge, of course, where they were raped and killed, then sacrificed on the sacred bonfire, where we get our word bonfire from, by the way, until only glowing embers were left. The bonfire, or bone fire it was originally, is the origin of the modern-day bonfire. As a matter of fact, of luck, for winter survival, all villagers expected to use the glowing embers of those bonfires to light their hearths when they were allowed to after they were extinguished for 3 days in that pre-celebration. The Druids commanded even more power, demanding all the people take part in their ritual of human sacrifice. So as you can clearly see, the jack-o'-lantern comes from an origin that is just so abhorrent, it makes your skin crawl. Halloween is not harmless. The evil people of this world have people in our modern era mimicking the witches and druids of old. We live in a time when witchcraft is being revived. Movies filled with it. So many television shows, so many sitcoms are teaching witchcraft to millions and millions upon millions. The Harry Potter books, same thing, furthering the cause of the satanic Halloween. It's no joke, because you see, anyone who's a Harry Potter fan knows that Harry Potter's favorite holiday is Halloween. The Roman Catholic Church borrowed Halloween from the witches, which shows you who the church leaders really worship. Now, the fullest account of these Druids and their religion was given by none other than Julius Caesar in his History of Wars in Gaul in 59 to 51 BC. Julius Caesar is insistent that the Druids originated in Britain, although there is no necessity to believe that all the features of the religion as it was practiced in Gaul were present in Britain. Interpreting Druidism is difficult because the Druids refused to commit anything about their beliefs and rituals to writing. Are you kidding? It's all word of mouth. And modern inquirers are obliged to rely on the accounts of the classical authors that we've been brainwashed on who the Druids are, who have a tendency to concentrate on the ghoulish, the bizarre, the malign. Later evidence of the early literature of Wales, and more particularly that of Ireland, can be pretty useful, although What has been preserved went through a process of selection and modification by Christian scribes, so tuned down again. The essence of Druidism seems to have been a kind of pantheism, and links have been discerned between it some aspects of Hinduism. The names of some 400 gods are known, most of whom seem to have had a very localized cult. The correct performance of ritual was central to the religion, and the prescribed pattern of ceremonies presumably constituted the greater part of the 20-year training undertaken by an apprentice druid. Yeah, you're an apprentice to become a druid for 20 years. Human sacrifice was practiced. When the druids of Anglesey were attacked by the Romans in 61 AD, their altars, according to Tacitus, were drenched with the blood of prisoners, as the Romans considered Druidism to be the nationalistic religion underpinning British resistance to the Empire of Rome. They were determined to destroy it. So in the 18th century, the growing interest in natural religion and in the noble savage Druidism captured the imagination of European intelligentsia. In Wales, the Welsh poetic tradition, believed to have been inherited from the Druids, and Edward Williams, also known as Iolo Morganwg, succeeded in 1820 in grafting druidical ceremonies of their own devising on the cultural festival, the one Eisteddfod association, which lasts all the way through history, up until today even. Knowledge was one of the highest prized possessions, you see, of Celtic society, and was taught by one of the highest classes of society, which consisted of the Druid priesthood, the Veits or Yuates, who performed magic and divination, telling the future, and the Bards, who gave the news and spread the word. Traveling troubadours did it in song and stories. There were also female prophetesses, who were priestesses of particular goddesses. These were called Daladas or Ueladas among the Gauls, and by titles like Banfi, female seer among the Irish. Daladas often occupied sacred groves of trees, oak, or caves, similar to those of their Greek sisters at the Oracle of Delphi. Now, the Druids, the Veits, and the Bards were teachers, historians, astronomers, poets. They controlled the legal system. The Druids acted as judges. The Druids supervised the executions. Each Druid was required to learn by heart the whole of their law, teaching poetry, story, myth, religious observance, astronomy, astrology, genealogy, and tribal history. This could take up to about 20 years. The Druids also had a fearsome reputation for magic. They were believed to have the ability to raise storms, winds, and mists, to make the sun stand still on its course. They could divine the secret names of the gods of their enemies and call these out in battle to make the opposing tribes tremble with fear. In the middle of a war, they could command the opposing factions to lay down their arms. We're talking incredibly powerful, knowledgeable people that ran a system that was airtight, locked down, and defended. This is Spaceman on Talk Radio, AM 640. There's more right after the break. I'm the guy to call the Spaceman. It's Talk Radio, AM 640. Emails to space@640toronto.com or spaceman@640toronto.com. Thanks so much for the one that you've sent. KB writes, hey, Space, hey, well, are you telling us a fairy story? Pumpkins are of South American origin, not found in early Europe. No, I said, that's the origin of the jack-o'-lantern. They used turnips in the ancient times. Druids had turnips, but the pumpkin was later used by the North Americans. But turnips were originally what were used to hollow them out. Put in the candle and tell the passersby of the Druids, leave this house alone, they're fine. The pentagram and blood on the door? Go in and kill someone. Bring them to Stonehenge for us later. No, I tell you the truth, KB. The jack-o'-lantern just came from this first ritual performed by the Druids, who were fearsome, ran the world as we knew it in those times. More than 2,000 years ago, in the area we know now as Ireland, England, Scotland, Wales, Druid priests capitalized on fears by nurturing the belief that evil spirits were responsible for bringing about the advent of cold weather, shorter hours of daylight, to placate the spirits, to set them at rest. After all, it's the Druids that kept the balance of power between the spirits and the physical world with the blood sacrifices that they offered, appeasing the gods, the people were told. The priests would initiate a festival honoring Samhain, the Lord of the Dead, the festival October 31st, the day before the beginning of the Celtic New Year. This New Year's Eve celebration gradually grew to ominous proportions. The priests ordered the people to extinguish all hearth fires, to gather around the huge bonfires on the hilltops. And those fires intended to frighten away the evil spirits. Fire, representation of the sun. They are sun worshippers here on earth. To honor the souls of people who had died during the past year. Religious rituals performed around these bonfires, followed by processions back to the villages, where embers from those large fires were used to reignite the hearth of fires in each home. It was illegal to start your fire, your first fire of the new year, any other way. The notion then developed that the souls of sinful persons, as well as the other evil spirits, were at large in the community during that night, New Year's Eve, Halloween. To discourage these mysterious entities from acts of retribution, sacrifices were thrown into the bonfires. That's why they were originally called bone fires, because people actually were the fuel for the fire. Then you lit your hearth with that flame for the rest of the year. I don't know if you dealt or ever lived with fireplaces, but you never let the fire go out, you see. You always have a burning ember that you can start it up again in the morning when you awake. So the fire never really goes out in the hearth when it's reignited after Halloween. The notion then developed that the souls of these sinful persons, as well as the other evil spirits, were at large in the community during the night. To discourage these mysterious entities from these tricks, as they could be called, the sacrifices, I says, thrown into those bonfires. And horses. At first, the sacrifices had domesticated animals. Horses were popular because they were believed to be the sacred animal, the sun god, who needed attention because he was punishing the people by giving them fewer hours of daylight. Then later, humans were used. The ancient name Samhain, spelt S-A-M-H-A-I-N, is being promoted in today's world as a holiday called Halloween. Its origins, I say, goes back to a pagan witch's sabbat called All Hallows' Eve, where the Druids' ritual, the Druids' New Year's Eve, actually has the stamp of the Christian world on it now, calling it All Hallows' Eve. You see, the Druids are running our world today. Absolutely all of the news events that you hear leading up to the satanic festival ritual known as Samhain is orchestrated by these people. These messages, the Illuminati, I call them, but they are sun worshippers in the druidic fashion. These messages have been sent already to a brainwashed world that is ready to accept the Antichrist, who will be its leader, man as God. Why? Because it's written in the stars. Douglas Adams, the author of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, explains how he came up with the number 42 as the answer of the meaning of life, the universe and everything, which is, in his novel, he takes a computer called Deep Thought, 7.5 million years to compute. Why the number 42? The answer is very simple. It was a joke. It had to be a number, an ordinary smallish number, he said. And I chose that one. He goes on to conceal the hidden meaning by saying binary representations, base 13, Tibetan monks, are all complete nonsense. I sat at my desk, he said, stared into the garden and thought, 42 will do, that'll do. That'll be the number that I used for all the answer of the meaning of life. He typed it out, end of story, he says. What Doug Adams doesn't explain and admit is that his seemingly flippant behavior is a grand example of gnosis in action. Knowledge, inspired by staring into the garden. Nature inspired gnosis. In The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, also known as H2G2 short, after Deep Thought's unsatisfying answer, the Earth is built as a supercomputer to determine the question. Subsequently, before the question is determined, the Earth is blown up. Once again, Adam's literary work becomes a rabbit hole into deep gnosis. Go down and find the knowledge. And if you stumble across it, you become a god. For the Earth is a computer, he says, and the answer to the life, the universe and everything for all of us is 42. What he didn't realize is the biospheric computer known as the Earth that he lived on and was a functioning part of, gave up the answer he would use in his story, staring at the garden. That says it all. And Jupiter has everything to do with our immediate future, too. A planet concoction ritual in the satanic world of the occult at this time of year can take your spirit to Jupiter, where you may supposedly converse with the beings that live there and learn from them. So say the adepts. This is a very magical time of year, Halloween weekend. I'm the Spaceman, Talk Radio AM 640. This is AVFS. I'm the guy to call space. This is A View from Space on Talk Radio AM 640. Communicate by email only. space@640toronto.com. One of the addresses, the other, spaceman@640toronto.com. Before the break, I was talking about, well, the planet Jupiter and the Oak Moon. It's all coming up. This will be just after the full moon this month. Will be just after the American election has been concluded and everyone will finally know the answer of who the next president is going to be. Now, marking that season with the full Oak Moon of November, 14th to be exact, coming up on Friday, it was the new moon of this Oak Moon, just the very beginning, so you can see where we're headed, because I tell you, Jupiter and this moon, the full moon in November, has everything to do with our immediate future, because you see, it's the religion of the Illuminati. I know, I follow them, I know their rituals, and the performance of the full Oak Moon of November, the drawing of the moon ritual, circle casting ritual, grounding and centering. The moon bath ritual is included in this. Making the season when the planet Jupiter takes over as guardian of the world until the sun returns to full power. Remember, Jupiter is the king planet. Marking that season, while the sabbats are devotional and celebratory these times, determined by the sun, the esbats are determined by the phases of the moon, during which time the goddess transforms between her three aspects, maiden mother and crona. The esbats, being celebrated on the full moon, represent the goddess in her mother aspect, and thus her greatest point of creation and potentiality. Throughout the year, there are 13 full moons, and the energy invoked with each different from all the others. The Oak Moon is the full moon seen in November this year on the 14th, as I said, representing the connection between the moon's energy and the optimistic outlook of Sagittarius. The new pagan year has begun, and with it comes the fresh optimism of Sagittarius. At this time, when the trees become bare, skies stay gray, and the memories of warmer days and the inner fortitude that spring will return soon is here, carried with us strongly. The oak is the Celtic tree ruled by Jupiter, and it's known to withstand even the most intense winter storms. This moon is so named because Jupiter's energy watches over the believer, the occultist, carefully during this time, making sure that they use their restful time wisely. And it's no accident that Jupiter is the ruling planet of the deep meditation and religion. Use this time to ponder the mysteries, you're told, of the soul, to experiment with high magic. Magic for any kind of artwork or writing is also especially well suited to the Oak Moon as that ritual. Before casting your circle, they perform your moon bath ritual. It's the purification bath. Candles are used, reciting the greetings to the goddess, which is, "Hear me, mother, from high above. I stand, ye night, in light and love, with ancient rites and ancient blood to guide and guard thy primal flood. From this, thy moon of sturdy oak, that opens eyes and lifts the cloak. Many seasons dark what fain the night, ere lift our souls to purest light." Yeah. The ritual of the Oak Moon, a planet concoction ritual of the satanic world of the occult, can take your spirit to Jupiter, they say, where you may supposedly converse with the beings that live there and learn from them. This ritual, drink, or brew, that they have too, that goes with this, is made up of 30 different plants. 30. Drop the zero, you get the 3, the royal number, because Jupiter is called the king planet, the royal planet. It's the largest. And the stipulation is, before you drink, it is that you must first make a pact with the plants for the rest of your life. Satan hid in the plants, didn't he, in the garden? So you're really making a pact with Satan. The plants are merely a symbol of him. It's the ritual of worshiping nature. Satan, Pan. Remember, the son of Satan, Cain, was the first farmer. After the pact is made, a relationship with the beings of Jupiter is established, and the brew made from the plants, the drug, is what's needed to take you there, to Jupiter, to converse with the spirits there. It's a drug. Take the symbol RX, for example, which is the symbol even today used for drugstores. It's the origin from the major lines and shape in the symbol of the Eye of Horus. Horus's eye, also like the lines, the Wajid eye, become a symbol for health. The Egyptians considered it a symbol of good and restored health. Remember, that's where the Druids originated, Egypt. In a cursive form, the letters RX are found in medieval translations of works of Ptolemy the astrologer, for instance, as the sign of the planet Jupiter. That's why it's used today as symbols in horoscopes and on formulas containing drugs made to ingest into the body, so that the harmful properties of these drugs might be removed under the influences of that planet. Yes. I tell you, there are more things to everything in this world, and if you look carefully, you can see. But you must go to its origin to understand where it's coming from. Jupiter, remember, the Illuminati are guided by three things, astrology, numerology, and sacred geometry. Astrology has played a huge role in ending the conflict in where Hillary Clinton's troubles are forming, Libya. How, you ask? Well, this close encounter with the king planet sends the message we're very close to the appearance of the new king that is to come, the Antichrist. On August 31st, Jupiter was shown somehow igniting with a mass explosion, which created a huge flash that has gotten the world of astronomy all excited. The explosion was directed toward comet Elenin. I believe that Elenin is not the true focus of that intense buzz. I believe it was to direct your attention to the planet Jupiter and the prophecy that goes along with it. In 2011, I believe it was, in October, the Earth passed between Jupiter and the Sun. And Jupiter is its closest opposition to Earth, and it happens again in the next year, 2022. We've got to wait a long time. Opposition simply means that this time, the Earth was directly in between the Sun and Jupiter, with Jupiter being the closest it ever gets to Earth, the king planet. Yes, the old king has passed away and the new king is coming. That's what the changes are all about. Jupiter is that largest planet in our solar system, symbolizes the strength and expansion of what the Illuminati are doing. Jupiter is the general symbol of authority and knowledge too. Science, sportsmanship, all under its reign. What's Prince Harry do? The veterans. He puts on the games. Sportsmanship. The royal family. If Jupiter makes a benign aspect, it increases possessions, makes rich and prosperous. On a psychological level, it gives a broad development and widens the horizon. It loves nature and natural methods. The astronomical sign for Jupiter, described as a stylized number 4, an artistic rendition of Jupiter's thunderbolt, an eagle, and letter Zeta, which is the Greek letter for Z, standing, of course, for Zeus. Zeus is Jupiter's namesake in Greek mythology. Zeus is actually Satan. The same symbol represents tin, since it's one of the planetary metals in alchemy. Jupiter was the Roman king of gods, and the god of the sky and thunder. It's the patron god of ancient Rome. Jupiter ruled over laws and social order. I'm a spaceman. There's more right after this break on Talk Radio AM 640. So, and you know what is Halloween? It's a religion. I'm the guy to call the spaceman at Talk Radio AM 640. Please direct your emails to space@640toronto.com or spaceman@640toronto.com. And thanks for the one that you sent. DP from the U.S. says, I've been looking forward to tonight's Halloween show for a while now, and it's been worth the wait. You forgot to mention earlier the not-so-swift Americans, as you put it, are that way because they just don't listen to your show. Keep up the good work, DP from the U.S. Almost like you, DP, there's a lot of people in the States now that are starting to tune it in. I work by word of mouth only. It's the best promotion there is. If it's good, people want it. If it's not, they don't. You got to push it on them. You got to smoke and mirrors on them to sell it. Hey, if you've got something, you don't have to sell it. So I like to think I've got the truth when it comes down to what's going on in our world. And I never change my story. Like one of my German emailers remarked recently, I never change my premise and my story. And that person has been listening for over a decade. Because everything that I've spoken about is either about to happen or has happened or is going to happen. I've been right on every American election since 2000. Because that's when I went on the air. The inception of the show was 2000. Now, we're being inundated with the occult through our entertainment. Because entertainment is what everyone in the world does today. The screen is the entertainment. So the virtual reality screen is full of, well, programming to direct you into a certain belief and lifestyle. Let me give you some examples. I brought up the number 42 earlier in the Galaxy movie. 42 occurring in the entertainment world is almost countless. Jordan Weissman founded 42 Entertainment. He specializes in creating and providing alternate reality games. In 03, his company worked on I Love Bees, Dark Knight, and the Beast, then found an organization called Smith and Tinker, a reference to the characters of the Wizard of Oz. And as admitted on their website, the number 42 is associated with the Dark Knight, and a video game called The Beast that takes place in 2142, the year 2142. The Beast is also a television show featuring Patrick Swayze. Screenwriter Bruce Joel Rubin worked on Ghost with Patrick Swayze as a ghost in the 42nd Street subway. Swayze also, in Donnie Darko, with a rabbit and a 42, and a black dog with a 42 on his license plate. Bruce Rubin also wrote the last Mimsy, featuring the 42 triangled Sri Yantra. The number 42, you see, is prominent in Lewis Carroll's writings, too, in the Alice in Wonderland. Remember Alice's Adventures in Wonderland? It's got 42 illustrations. Rule 42 in Alice's Adventures is in Wonderland. All persons more than a mile high to leave the court. Rule 42 is code for the preface, in the preface to The Hunting of the Snark. No one shall speak to the man at the helm. In Fit the First of The Hunting of the Snark, and Baker had 42 boxes, all carefully packed, with his name painted clearly on each. The White Queen announces her age is 101, 5 months and a day, which is best possible date assumed for the action of Through the Looking Glass. Gives a total of 37,044 days. And with the further textually unconfirmed assumption that both queens were born on the same day, their combined age becomes 74,088 days, which is 42 times 42 times 42 in Lewis Carroll's Alice in Wonderland. Some commentators have asserted that this is deliberate on Lewis Carroll's part. I know it is. Joel Rubin was also the screenplay writer who wrote for the movie Deep Impact. 42 is a reflection of the Jupiter or tin symbol, and we're also informed that rainbows are created at 42 degrees. So the 42 is cleverly hidden in the movie. The Wizard of Oz, as the monarch butterfly, played by Judy Garland, goes over the 42nd degree of the rainbow. Going over the rainbow, by the way, is code in the world of mind control to mean being programmed by the handler. When they're over the rainbow, that means they have completed their personality adjustment, their takeover, their possession. There are 42 generation names in the Gospel of Matthew's version of the genealogy of Jesus. It's prophesied that for 42 months, the beast will hold dominion over the earth. That's in Revelation 13, verse 5. As it pertains to the ancient Egyptian mystery religion, which is where it all comes from, there are 42 principles of the weighing of the mat on where you're going to spend eternity with Osiris as your judge. The ancient Egyptian personification of physical, moral, order, law, and truth. In the judgment scene described in the Egyptian book of the coming, going forth day by day, the Book of the Dead, which evolved from the coffin texts and the pyramid texts, there are 42 gods and goddesses of Egypt personifying the principles of the mat, the weighing of the feather. Is your soul lighter than a feather? Then you're in. Who asks questions of the departed while Thoth records the answers? Why? It's Osiris, the judge. But Thoth, his second-hand man, his right-hand man, answers, or records the answers, and the deceased's heart is weighed against the feather of truth. These 42 correspond to the 42 gnomes, governmental units of Egypt in the ancient times. If the departed successfully answers all 42 questions, she becomes an Osiris, a god in the next world. In this religion, the occult, going over the rainbow originally meant the person was approaching the twilight zone of rebirth, reincarnation. The name Soen, being promoted, today's media, disguised as entertainment. It's the vehicle used by the Illuminati in their comic book company, Marvel. Marvel Comics states this of Soen. Real name, unrevealed. Identity, class, demon, class 2. Active during post-Hyperborean era through Middle Ages, or what's known as the Dark Ages. Soen returns again to the modern era, just like the spirit of Satan is about to do. I have to tell you, this is the one the Druids wanted to be called God in the Dark Ages, and is returning very soon. We are in the modern age. His occupation? Eternal embodiment of All Hallows Eve. You see, his affiliations, as listed by Marvel Comics, are Celtic Druids, Egyptians, three costumed children, including Holy LaDonna. The Druids are not peculiar to only England, either. No, many people don't understand that Druids and the Celts date all the way back, as I say, to ancient Egypt. They are the sun worshippers who are even today running our world through their black magic capabilities, of which I speak about every week. In Marvel Comics, Soen is a character. He's affiliated with the ghosts of Count Nefaria, Crimson Dynamo, Dark Phoenix, Dracula, Egghead, Michael Korvac, Salem 7, Baron Wolfgang von Thrucker, and Baron Heinrich Zemo. His base of operations is listed as the Land of the Dead. Of course, taking it right from the Osiris myth. The Netherworld. In the ancient Egyptian mystery religion, the Netherworld ruled by the first highest sun god deity, Osiris, of which the numbers 17 and 42 are inextricably connected. On the Spaceman's Talk Radio, AM 640. More right after this break. I'm a guy they call Space. It's Talk Radio, AM 640. The Spaceman. Emails to space at 640toronto.com or spaceman at 640toronto.com. Thank you for the one that you've sent me. So Halloween is actually Soen, ancient Soen in the Druidic realm of religious rituals. And Soen is a character. He's actually the god, and it is a male after the fall equinox. Males dominate. It is a male who is the head of the Celtic Druid gods who look after the herds of cattle. And of course, if you're looking after cattle, the ancient Celts, cattle were wealth. It gave you the food. It gave you the nourishment to live. It gave you clothing. It was a way of life. Marvel Comics has a character named Soin. Just to keep it in front of who? Kids who grow up with the belief in the back of their minds. Brainwashed. Soin is affiliated with the ghosts of Count Nefaria, Crimson Dynamo, Dark Phoenix, Dracula, as I said before the break. Marvel Comics is a way to get the occult into people's heads. Entertainment. That's how they're selling their religion. Soin in Marvel Comics is connected and for some time was trapped on Earth with the druid Tome. More on that druid Tome coming up on AVFS on Talk Radio AM 640. Soin's very first appearance in Marvel Comics was in the comic called Vision and Scarlet Witch, number one. But it's a collector's item now. November 1982 released. Of course, it would be originally revealed right at the time of the Druid's New Year, wouldn't it? November 1982. When else? Marvel lists Soin's, the character's powers, abilities, as a malevolent entity born from the terror of mankind. How's that for a little fun holiday that gives candy to kids when you knock at the door free? Over the centuries, he feasted like a parasite on the offerings for the dead. In Britain, he was further empowered by the Celtic Druids who gave him the form of Soin and made him, with spells, invincible on All Hallows' Eve. They also bound him to the Druid Tome, which was an ultimately hidden and forgotten in Greymoor Castle. I remind you again, I reveal much more about Greymoor Castle coming up in a few minutes. Soin was able to detect any kind of magic. On Halloween, he was indestructible. As long as the druid Tome existed, he possessed vast magical power, and power that allowed him to create winds, turn humans into magically empowered slaves, and create insects and lizards from the thin air. He also carried a magical scythe that seemingly allowed him to travel through time, or rather show images of his past to others. On Halloween, he was also the leader of other ghosts in the land of the dead. Without the druid Tome, he was a powerful but not invincible energy being, without any connection to Earth whatsoever. So, Marvel's history goes like this. Soin first appears in the comic entitled Vision and Scarlet Witch, as I've said, in 82, released right at Halloween, and the Celtic New Year's Eve. In that inaugural episode, it reveals that Soin was born in a prehistoric time, when cavemen drew their fears, pictures of them, on the walls of the caves. In ancient Egypt, Soin feasted on the vast offerings Egyptians buried their pharaohs with. Remember when Pharaoh died? That was a bad, bad day. Because all of his servants, all of his slaves that were with him in the palace, when the Pharaoh died, you died and were put into the tomb with him. The Marvel comic history, which is remarkably close to the truth, states that in Britain, Samhain was worshipped by druids but were slain by Roman legionnaires. Samhain rewarded the priests who worshipped him with death. In the Middle Ages, Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris on Halloween, madmen get involved with dark forces, including Samhain, in these stories told by Marvel about this character called Samhain in their books. Captain America, the Druid Tome, was Samhain, trapped inside, was hidden in the walls of Greymore Castle in England for several hundred years. And also in another Captain America episode, the Tome was found and brought to the United States by Captain America. Now, Vision and Scarlet Witch, which is the first appearance of the comic, Samhain. On Halloween, Edwin Jarvis gives the Tome to the Scarlet Witch, who later opened it in the library of her new home and saw that it was an ancient spell book written in druidic runes. So she couldn't read it yet, but instead of trying to decipher it right then, she spent some time with her husband, Vision. Unseen by them, the Tome she had just closed and laid on the table opened itself, all by itself, as if by magic, and turned its pages until the page with Soen's image was seen. Scarlet Witch sees it after the vision left, but wasn't disturbed by it because she thought she'd left it open herself. The Tome then began to glow when it was hit by the moonlight. Suddenly the window was blown open and a light ball left the Druid Tome and left the library through the window. Outside it enslaved three costumed children and turned them into monsters. They broke into the house and attacked Jarvis and Vision. This is a comic book with Samhain and his power demonstrated. Meanwhile, Samhain materializes from the Druid Tome, the book, the ancient druidic book, in the library and revealed his history to the Scarlet Witch by traveling with her through time. After that, the Scarlet Witch told Samhain that her era had no use for Samhain, but in return he told her how he was freed again from Greymore Castle and how he'd got to the United States. He sensed Scarlet's witch presence and knew that magic still lived in this age. He didn't know why the Scarlet Witch hadn't summoned him, but he was able to wait until Halloween, the day he was the strongest, strong enough to free himself. Samhain then attacks the Scarlet Witch with insects and lizards. She tries her best to fight Samhain's attack. And downstairs, Vision had destroyed one of Samhain's servants and realized that they were children before they were empowered by Samhain. After destroying another one, he followed the third servant upstairs where he saw Wanda in the library kneeling in front of the Samhain. He took the third servant, a ghost, outside and left Wanda alone. Continues to fight Samhain, who wanted her to join him. She avoided his attacks, but her own powers were useless against him. But then she realized what she had to do. She blew the Druid Tome with a hex into the fire, and it burned. Samhain was pulled back into the Tome, and the Tome and Samhain were seemingly destroyed. Only the ashes of the Tome were left, the book of runes written by the druids. The three children were human again and woke up. Vision then joined his wife in the library. In Vision and Scarlet Witch number 5, on Halloween, the Scarlet Witch talks to the ghost of Agatha Harkness, who tries to warn her from the threat of her grandchildren and Samhain. But it was already too late. Wanda was pulled into the land of the dead by Thorn, a And as soon as she was there, the Salem 7 revealed to her that they needed her child to return to Earth. So Ann watched as Wanda fled from the Salem 7 and other ghosts. He created illusions to slow her down for his servants, but the Scarlet Witch was able to fight them all off. This is a Marvel comic book showcasing So-In, or Halloween as we call it today on Talk Radio AM 640. I'm talking the spirit of fear and death. Emails to spaceman at 640toronto.com or space at 640toronto.com. Thank you so much for the response tonight on So-In, Halloween. Oh, and So-In is also a character in the Marvel comics world. And here's how they slip in possession of a demonic spirit. So-In tries illusions with Wanda's mother in Vision and Scarlet Witch, number 5. And Wanda is a young child. The mother, Magda, her adopted parent, and also Miss America, because they have to tie that in with So-In, too. Agatha appears at the stake and told Wanda not to believe everything she saw because it was So-In's work, so she couldn't oppose. So-In appears behind Wanda and told her that he wanted her child to support his form in her world. In other words, I want to possess your daughter. He then explains to Wanda that he was still around because the tome that he was bound in, that they threw in the fire, still existed, only in a million fragments after it was burnt, which made So-In as good as immortal as the book could ever be, never be destroyed. So-In begins to transfer himself into the child at this point in the story. Scarlet Witch tries to fight So-In, but again her powers proved useless, and she soon passed out. Meanwhile, on Earth, the Vision had reassembled the druid Tome, the spellbook, and managed to destroy it for good by burning it down to its atoms this time. So-In felt it when this link to Earth was broken. He became a pure energy being and couldn't hold his form of So-In any longer. But because he had already finished the spell, he was still going to take the form of Wanda's child. Agatha Harkness escapes from the stake to attack So-In, who wasn't invincible anymore on Halloween after he had lost the form of So-In. Agatha redirects So-In's energy into the Salem 7 to trap him in the land of the dead forever. Little entertainment for your kids. Little entertainment for young adults, too, collect comic books. Looking at the history of this thing, calling itself So-In, born long before the Celts were around, it was also active in areas the real Celts god, whatever, seen active in, like Egypt. The Celts' magic not only gave this being the form of So-In, but also made him invincible and more powerful on Halloween, at his most powerful. As the embodiment of Halloween, he is summoned forth by many humans over the centuries. We're doing it again this weekend. As soon as the book was destroyed, the Tome, all the power and invincibility was gone, and So-In was screwed, which makes him look pretty weak without the support of human magic. Because there is no power in Satanism unless there are people believing it and pushing it. And believe me, they are in high places in our world. They are running this world. On Earth 961 in the 31st century, So-In is defeated by the Guardians of the Galaxy, if you can believe it. The Irish heroine Shamrock in Cuchulainn is unknown if this Soan is the same one as encountered by Vision and Scarlet, though, the Scarlet Witch, though, in the comic book. Some of the ghosts seen in Vision and Scarlet Witch were just illusions created by Soan. Magda, for instance, Miss America and Wizard, all illusions for sure. Some of the characters that have since been revealed to never have died were illusions as well. Others like Salem 7 and Dracula, that really were dead at the time and have since returned from the dead, were likely the real deal. The Salem 7 were brought back to life in Avengers Annual 2000. Since their return, it wasn't mentioned that Soen's energy was trapped within them. And in the Captain America episode of 256, number 256, the Druid Tome, the magic book, was kept at Greymore Castle in England. Dreadman Druid was after it. He was defeated by Captain America and Cedric Rawlings in the story. Cap and Cedric soon found the Tome, and Captain America offered it to Cedric to decipher, but Cedric didn't want to, and Cap decided to bring the Tome to the United States. Captain America gave the Tome to Edwin Jarvis. Jarvis gave the Tome to the Scarlet Witch in her new home in Leona, Jersey. New Jersey. The Scarlet Witch couldn't read the Tome. Left it on the table because it was Halloween. Soan was powerful enough to escape the Tome by himself. So the Scarlet Witch hurled the book into the open fire in her library, and it was seemingly destroyed, along with Soan. But the ashes in the Tome remained on Earth. And after Soan had Wanda brought to the land of the dead, the ghost of Agatha Harkness contacted Vision and told him, destroy the Tome. With the help of Glamour and Illusion, Vision realized that they had to destroy the ashes of the book as well. Vision found a big part of the ashes on the ghost costume which was worn by the servants of Soan. Glamour and Illusion, a couple of characters, reassembled the Tome as every ash flake was brought to them by the wind. Vision then used solar rays to burn it down to its atoms. With the Tome destroyed, Soan lost his humanoid form as invincibility on Halloween. Dreadman Druid, fictional character in the Marvel Comics universe, also simply known as the Druid, was a subversive cult leader with knowledge of alchemy and advanced technology. Dreadman Cromwell, was born in Caribou, Maine as the Druid. He became the professional criminal and leader of his own druidic cult. The Druid attempted an assassination of Nick Fury. And with his followers, he battled Nick Fury and S.H.I.E.L.D., which is a fictional espionage and secret military law enforcement agency in the Marvel Comics universe. So, the Druid later abducts Captain America, pits him against a maze of death traps that he created. You see, this is the grips that America is in even today, put into the Marvel Comics universe as brainwashing material for the North American. You buy Marvel Comics? You know about these things I'm speaking of tonight? Space back in the morning, moment. I'm a spaceman. This is a View from Space. That's all it is. Talk radio, AM 640. Emails to spaceman at 640toronto.com or space at 640toronto.com. They come rolling in before this show even begins. Thanks for the one you sent. Now, I've been talking about Soan, which is actually the real name of this All Hallows Eve that's broken down now in the 21st century, the 20th century. We started calling it Halloween, kind of spicing it up, making it a little more, because historically Halloween is the deadliest holiday ever celebrated in human history. So as remarking before this last hour was up, Soan, an actual character in Marvel Comics, Yes, they're brainwashing people to accept the Antichrist when he comes. The Satanic Night is dedicated to the Celtic Lord of the Dead, Samhain, also symbolized by the horned god, the stag god, as they call him. The Druids celebrated Samhain as a three-day fire festival, building huge bonfires, thought to ward off demons that roamed around. You see, fire is a representative of the sun, their god here on earth. The fire provided the means by which the required human sacrifice would be presented to the sun god in enormous wicker baskets. The priests caged both the human and animals and made them sacrifice over flame, which they then lowered into the fire. The priests would carefully watch how the victim died in order to predict whether the future held good or evil. And what better way to spread this sick tradition than to hide it as a holiday where kids get free candy? All they got to do is put on a mask, be possessed, because I'll get to what masks are coming up in this hour. But what a better way to bait and trap little children into this macabre ritual that will be repeated in their life over and over every single year, and they'll pass on to their children. This pagan practice is over 2,000 years old. For the sake of the safety and well-being, people put outside their homes sweets, the best mutton legs, vegetables, eggs, poultry in the old days, honey, and even wine, so the wandering evil spirits would consume them on their way back to the netherworld. Failure to treat these evil spirits might result in a curse being put on the home. So the people literally believed that when these spirits came to your door, they would trick you if you did not treat them. Trick or treat. The American version of the Halloween came from Ireland. Potato famine, 1840, brought thousands of those Irish immigrants from the Emerald Isle. With them came goblins, jack-o'-lanterns, bonfires, apples, nuts, pranks. The Irish were also responsible for bringing trick or treating to great popularity in America. In Ireland, October 31, peasants from house to house traveled, getting offerings for their druid god, Mac-Ola, as they called him. Mac-Ola is really Samhain. This procession stopped at each house to tell the farmer his prosperity was due to the benevolence of the way they treated him, or else something very bad might happen to the farmer and his crops. Few farmers risked any displeasure, of course, from the pagan deity, so the procession returned home with everything under the sun. Eggs, butter, potatoes, cheese, some cases even coins. To the Irish farmer, this was no joke. They really feared the Celtic god Samhain might destroy their homes and barns, whom they called Mac-Ola. Trick or treat is part of the pagan heritage. People would also take burning wisps from the bonfire and wave them around to frighten the many evil spirits roaming the earth. Because, you see, the bonfire's fire was fueled by human flesh. Sacrifices were made to those bonfires in the top of the hills all over ancient England, Ireland, Wales, and Scotland. In the case of the burning wisp alone would not work, revelers clothed themselves in the most hideous and terrifying costumes. These people believed that if you dressed in a terrifying costume and went trooping around with the spirits all night, they would think you were one of them and would leave you alone. Now, the huge bonfires. Satan's obsession with fire has made his followers also obsessed with building huge bonfires. They symbolize the sun. In the ancient Egyptian religion, it's the god Ra. Now, these bonfires were practical in that they provided the means used by the priests who were put to death to human and animal sacrifices to, well, to placate Samhain at Halloween. When the last fires died out, people would race each other down the hills, shouting, "The devil gets the last one down," because it really happened. Samhain, Halloween, also was the time to engage the devil's assistants in divining the future. Questions concerning the marriage coming up in the new year. Remember, it is the new year for the Druids. Luck, health, at the time of a person's death, were most popular subjects of divination. Tell me when I'm going to die. Tell me who I'm going to marry. Tell me if I'll be sick. In Scotland, young people got together for games. Pulled shoots out of the ground for a game which ascertained which of them would marry during the coming year, and in what order the marriages would even occur. This was a huge manipulative holiday. It was religion. This was the power of the Druid high priests. They had power over every facet of life. And guess what? I have news for you. They still do. They're running the world today. Their belief system is. There was a snap apple night in ancient times, for centuries. Now you know where the drink company Snapple got its name from. Apples have been a token of love and fertility. All Halloween parties had people bobbing for apples in the tubs of water. Now, if a boy came up with an apple between his teeth, he was assured of the love of his girl. The snap apple game was a game the boys loved. Each boy, in his turn, would spring up to attempt to bite an apple that was being twirled in the end of a stick. The first boy to succeed would be the first one to marry. And, of course, marriage was what everyone wanted. Sometimes string was used to suspend the apple in the air. Now, apple seeds were also used to tell fortunes. Peeling an apple, for instance, in one long piece was supposedly to tell a young girl about her future. The girl would swing the apple peel 3 times round her head. Yes, I know the royal number. Then throw it over her left shoulder for the left-hand path. Magic. Black magic. If the peeling fell unbroken, the girl would examine the shape into which it fell to see if she could ascertain the initials of her future husband. Now, owls, bats, cats, toads today, essential part of Halloween, right? And for every household, you're going to find one this weekend. And for a very good reason were they at the beginning. They're known as the witch's familiars. Owls are. Bats, cats, and toads. That's why they're in your home tonight. A divining familiar with the species of animal whose shape Satan would assume to aid the witch in telling the future. A witch would closely watch the animal's movements, whether slow or fast, and she would see the direction in which the animal moved and the kinds of sounds it made in order to foretell the length of life and or any coming illnesses. There's more when I return on the origins of our, well, such an entertaining, wonderful, fun time of year, Halloween. It's Spaceman on Talk Radio. This is AM 640. This is ABFS, Talk Radio, AM 640. I'm the Spaceman. Emails to space, 640toronto.com or spaceman at 640toronto.com. Not sure if you caught the first hour. And I'm going to repeat it one more time because I believe it to be very powerful. Jack-o'-lantern, the trick-or-treat, How to get started? What happened? There's various names for jack-o'-lanterns. Lantern Man, Hobblelonger, Will-o'-the-Wisp, the Lantern Man. They all got the name from the pale, eerie lights that appeared over bogs and marshes and in ancient England. Now, these ghostly lights, which bobbed along like a lantern, sort of, in someone's hand, were called corpse candles. Candles were said to be signals from the souls of men lost at sea. Celts often hollowed out a turnip and carved a grotesque face on it to fool demons. They carried out such lanterns to light their way in the dark and to ward off evil spirits. The turnip was still popular back then as it is today in Europe. But the pumpkin in North America has replaced the turnip. It's bigger and easier to carve. Jack is also a nickname for John, which is a common slang and would mean man. So jack-o'-lantern literally means man with a lantern. Now, this is the real truth about the origin of this man-o'-lantern, jack-o'-lantern. The Druids originated this practice, hollowing out a jack-o'-lantern, a turnip first used, filling them with human fat. Whenever a raiding party came to a home to demand of the husband that someone inside be surrendered as a human sacrifice at Stonehenge for later, on All Hallows Day, New Year's Eve is Halloween Eve, and then the 31st Halloween Day, the sacrifices would be made on a Hallows Eve. So if the husband inside the house, the head of the household, surrendered a human sacrifice to the Druids, they would light a jack-o'-lantern filled with human fat. If the husband gave in and provided one of his loved ones as the sacrifice, the Druid party would leave it there on the porch. And this lantern would be to tell other raiding parties of Druids and their demonic hosts that this party had surrendered a human sacrifice for the party later, and the remaining people inside were to be left alone, guaranteeing that no one else in the house would be killed that night, was the treat. If the husband refused to surrender one of his family, a trick would be placed on the house. Members of the raiding party would draw a large hexagram using human blood in the front door. They cut the blood for the hexagram from the dead body they dragged around behind them with a cable tow to scare the hell out of everyone. The next procession of Druids coming along would see the blood-drawn hexagram and attack the inhabitants of that house, taking whatever they wanted anyway. So by doing this ritual on Halloween, it was an exercise in terror. A truly scary night, driving some insane, for the fear of the Druids knocking on their door. That's the true origin of trick-or-treat and jack-o'-lanterns. Are you going to take your kids trick-or-treating or treating? If you do, and you know the true origin now of the Druid ritual, then you know what you're consciously doing. Here's some forbidden practices, especially associated with Halloween. Satanic practices are all absolutely forbidden on the pain of death. Every one of them is uniquely associated with Halloween. First one is enchantment. The act of influencing by charms and incantations using a practice of magical arts. These practices draw on the power of Samhain, of the Celtic god of the herd. Witchcraft is number two. It deals with demonic spirits using their prescribed methods, commonly called rituals and the magic arts. Thanks to Harry Potter and the Lord of the Rings and other witchcraft stories and movies that are skyrocketing in popularity, television shows show witches on every channel. Go to a video, a place to rent videos, or download it on HBO or somewhere. Walk down the horror aisle in those virtual libraries, and you'll see a popularity of witchcraft that is unparalleled in this world today. Sorcery is another one. The use of power gained from the prescribed rituals demanded by the demonic host. Once the witch or wizard performs the particular ritual correctly, the demonic host is required to provide the power to accomplish that action desired by the witch. Sorcery. Divination. Fortune telling. Looking into the future. Yes, Lucifer loves to get people consumed by the idea that they can know what lies ahead of them. Wizardry is another one. The art or practices of a wizard. Sorcery. A wizard or witch is one skilled in the magic arts of illusion. Necromancy. The communication with the dead, specifically conjuring up the spirits of the dead for purposes of magically revealing the future or influencing a course of events. These are practices that are absolutely forbidden on the pain of death. Satanic practices. Charms. The practice of putting a spell on someone in order to change or control their mind. Or behavior. Wizards love to get their enemies one-on-one because they can charm them through the use of ritual done before the meeting or by the demonic host living within them. Adolf Hitler himself followed this practice closely as he dealt with the leaders of Europe, Britain, and Russia. British Prime Minister Chamberlain was totally charmed by Hitler as he tried to appease the German dictator in Munich in 1938, just before the war broke up. Chamberlain was so totally charmed by Hitler, he enthusiastically proclaimed that after returning from Munich, that he had achieved what he called peace in our time. And of course, less than a year later, World War II began. Stargazing or astrology is another one. Divinations of the supposed influences of the stars and other heavenly bodies on human lives and the affairs of nations. Occultists literally order their lives according to astrology and numerology and astrology. Now, magic is another one too. Tapping into the power of the demonic realm through the use of prescribed rituals, so that action carried out is accomplished through demonic power. All these activities are uniquely associated with the activities and traditions of Halloween. Oh, and one more thing on Halloween. If you've been paying attention, you'll know that these practices form the heart and the soul of the Harry Potter books and movies. Another Harry Potter movie coming out this winter. He comes from a family of witches and wizards. Generational witchcraft, it's called. His entire existence within these novels revolves around the Hogwarts School of Wizardry and witchcraft, where Harry and his friends learn all of the forbidden practices. Oh, yeah. So, the source of black and orange, the color of Halloween, where'd that come from? To contrast the pagan celebrations, the Western Christians celebrated All Saints' Day, All Souls' Day during the liturgies. On All Souls' Day, a penitential sorry for doing wrong. Liturgy was offered, asking God's mercy on those souls. Dark vestments, black, brown, or purple, were worn by the priests. Black. Priests. Black is knowledge. It represents knowledge in the occult. The candles used in the penitential services were unbleached beeswax. You ever seen unbleached beeswax? It's orange in color, bright orange. The Druids borrowed those two colors for their own. Representing knowledge, black. And the unbleached beeswax to light their lights in the jack-o'-lanterns. Orange in color. Spaceman Talk Radio, AM 640. More next. It's the Spaceman on Talk Radio, AM 640, revealing the origin of this holiday we call Halloween that has so many permeating variables to it this year, as well as every leap year with Samhain, which is October 31st, the Druids' New Year, being very close to the American election every leap year. And I hope you caught my show that I did recently on what the actual connection is with America and leap years and why the election is held every leap year. And tonight I explained why it's near Halloween. Now, there has been so much hype. Witchcraft is being pushed on so many generations, and each generation that comes along in the last, say, 30 years has gotten a hotter and hotter dose of it. And this growing interest in this belief in the occult powers, this brainwashing, is one reason that Halloween celebrations are so popular today, with their emphasis on dark powers and death. For one night, obnoxious, mean-spirited behavior is cool. It's interesting to know that a poll, a youth survey, found that nearly one in every three teens believe in the power of witchcraft. It comes from their brainwashing. And one in five believes in ghosts. Also, almost all teens surveyed believe in some supernatural phenomena and are okay with it. Don't think it's evil. Don't think it's destructive. Think it's entertaining, because that's all they've been showing that it is. Now, also let me point out something about masks that you may or may not know. There are spiritual ramifications to masks, wearing masks, that actually have far-reaching consequences, you know, which, by the way, are always used in satanic rituals today. You see, you are left vulnerable to the spirits connected with the masks. You are asking the demonic spirits. No, that's not totally correct. You're inviting those demonic spirits to be a part of you with the mask, since masks allow you to be anonymous. You can do things that you wouldn't normally do. You're putting on another persona. In short, you're being possessed. You're turning into something you're not. We're supposed to keep our own identity. If you put that truth into a social context, if nobody wore masks, think of it. All the bank holdups. All of the ISIS soldiers. All totally revealed because they wear masks, cover their faces, to hide their identity. How about all of these so-called videos that you see on the internet with people's identity with facial paint. It's the power of the mask. The day before Samhain, last day of summer, in the old year for the Celtic tribe, and the day after Samhain is the first day of winter, or the new year. Being between seasons or years, Samhain was and is considered a very magical time, when the dead walk among the living and the veils between the past and the present, as I remarked earlier in the show, and future may be lifted in prophecy and divination. And it's easier to pass from one realm to the other this time of year only. This is some evidence to indicate that 3 days were spent celebrating this festival. Philip Gar Gom, chosen chief of the Order of Bards, Ovates, and Druids, speaking of both Paleo-Pagan and Meso-Pagan Druids in England, he had this to say about it in his Elements of the Druid Tradition. Samhain, October 31st to November 2nd, was a time of no time. Celtic society, like all early societies, was highly structured and organized. Everyone knew their place. But to allow that order to be psychologically comfortable, the Celts knew they had to. There had to be a time when order and structure were abolished, when chaos could reign. And Samhain was such a time. Time was abolished for 3 days of this festival, and people did crazy things. Men dressed as women, women as men. This happened at Beltane, too. Farmers' gates left unhinged, left in ditches. And, of course, the livestock would get away, wouldn't they? All kinds of havoc would be created. People's horses were moved to different fields. But behind this apparent lunacy lay a deeper meaning. The Druids knew that these 3 days had a special quality about them. The veil between this world and the world of the ancestors was drawn aside on these nights. And for those who were prepared, journeys could be made in safety to the other side. Spirit world. So the Druid rites were concerned with making contact with the spirits of the departed, who were seen as sources of guidance and inspiration rather than as sources of dread. The dark moon, the time when no moon can be seen in the sky, was the phase of the moon which ruled this time, because it represents a time in which our mortal sight needs to be obscured in order for us to see into the other worlds. The dead are honored and feted, not as the dead, but as living spirits of loved ones and of guardians who hold the root wisdom of the tribe. The Christian church was unable to get the people to stop celebrating this holiday, so they simply sprinkled a little holy water on it and gave it a new name. As it did with other paleo-pagan holidays and customs, the church began hiding the satanic rituals in Christian vesture. This is a form of calendrical imperialism, co-opting paleo-pagan sacred times as they had paleo-pagan sacred places. Most, if not all, of the great cathedrals of Europe that were built on top of earlier paleo-pagan shrines and sacred groves, where many blood sacrifices were obviously offered up. So when fundamentalists come to your local school board and try to get Hollywood removed from the public schools because it's a pagan holiday, they're perfectly correct. Of course, Valentine's Day, Lupercalia, Easter is Ostra, Christmas is Yule in the Celtic religion, all of many paleo-pagan elements associated with their dating and symbols. Now, before and after the arrival of Christianity, early November was when people in Western and Northern Europe finished the last of their harvests, butchered their cows, the excess stock. So the surviving animals would have enough food to make it through the winter. And held great feasts. They invited their ancestors to join them. Thanksgiving Day. Decorated family graves. Told ghost stories. The American Election Day actually decided on that ritual. As I remarked earlier in the show tonight, pointing that out, those who practice witchcraft and sorcery are experts at mixing herbs to make medicines and poisons. They could curse someone by just obtaining a lock of hair, a fingernail clipping, just a bit of the clothing, any personal item. Witches and other occult groups have 8 major festivals during the year. This includes the 4 solstices at the changing of the seasons, as well as October 31st, Halloween. While most witches don't do sacrifices, human anyway, the other forms of satanic worship do. As the witches desire more power, they will find out that is how to get it. But it will require sacrificing of a life. Both in satanic cults do human sacrifices as needed to appease their gods. All based in, on, So-En. As you know it, it's called Halloween. It's Talk Radio AM 640 AM Space. Back with more right after this. It's ABFS on Talk Radio AM 640. I'm a spaceman. And this is the last segment of tonight's show. So-En. The most important of the fire festivals of the Druids, because it marked the Celtic New Year. The day itself is a time for paying homage to the sun god Baal, who had given the ripened grain for safe storage. The Celts' Indo-European cousins in India celebrate Diwali, which is their New Year's festival that honors the safe return from the dark forest of the celestial couple, Rama and Sita. This chief god Baal and symbolizes the sun. The Druids thought that when the sun died or was captured at the end of October, the powers of darkness took over. They mourned the death of the sun since they had little knowledge of astrology or physical sciences, nor the progression of the equinoxes or seasons. They thought that for the next 6 months, the sun god Baal was busy fighting enemies who were in cahoots with the lord of darkness, So-En. According to the ancient myths, So-En was the time of year when remote tribal peoples of antiquity paid tribute to their conquerors, and a divinatory time when the Sid might reveal to them the magnificent, glorious palaces of the gods of the underworld. Also, So-En was considered to be a time of dark prognostic omens and dark couplings, a time when malignant birds emerge from the caves of Grogum to prey on humans, led by a monstrous three-headed vulture whose foul breath withered the autumnal harvested crops. Mythical kings and fallen heroes were said to have died on So-En. While carousing Ulster, warriors known as the Iliad had met their imminent death by fire and sword at the hands of their monster enemies on the battlefield. For the Druids, the year ended October 31, for that was when all nature seemed to be dying out. Leaves wither, fell to the ground, plants drooped, farmers yielded crops, no longer. So-En was the original festival that came to be the Christianized All Saints' Day in medieval Europe, to give it a free pass into our lifetime. This is now November 1st of the current Christian calendar, All Saints' Day, moved. So-En was one of the 3 solar festivals, you see, marked by the sacred fires and sacrificial blazing rituals on October 31st. The other, 1st of May, for sowing. Then another fire festival, the 21st of June, for the ripening of the turn of the year. And the Vespers, or Eve of the 1st November, for harvesting, another fire festival. Fire, representing the sun again in ancient Druidic lore. During the last of these festivals, the Druids dressed in white robes gathered around the cairns of the local hilltops where a sacred bonfire burned eternally throughout their entire calendar year in symbolic homage to their emblem of the sun. During the height of the Druids, the priestly caste of Celtic society, all fires except those of the Druids put out, extinguished, snuffed out. So in October 31st was the beginning. Householders levied a fee or a tax for the holy fire which burnt in their altars. Even nowadays, in countries populated by Celtic stock or lineage, like Brittany, Ireland, Wales, Gaelic Scotland, or in certain ritual or rural, rather, English counties, permeated in the past by certain Celtic influences, we still see survival of old traditions and customs like the bonfires associated with the season of the holy souls. In Ireland, a certain custom has come to be known as Samhain or La Samhain, for the feast of the sun is what's meant. Ever wonder why the black cat is only big at Halloween? To the Druids, you see, cats were sacred. And in time, black cats came to be associated with Halloween. They were thought to have carried magical power that humans did not possess. Cats were often thought to be witches' helpers, or were feared as being the reincarnated souls of evil persons who had lived once before. You see, this all stems from the ancient Celts of the ancient Egyptian mystery religion. Cats were sacred. Black means knowledge. Why do you think priests wear black? The Druids' New Year's Day. Samhain. Here's the witch origin. The word witch itself, a huge presence at Halloween, right, has unraveled itself throughout the centuries in time for the Middle English Wicca, meaning wizard or sorceress. The Middle Dutch root prefix, weak, meaning to separate or to set aside for religious worship, implied a woman supposedly having supernatural powers by means of maintaining a secret pact with the devil or with the evil spirits of the underground world. And a lot of researchers believe our modern word victim evolved from this ancient Dutch meaning. The closest Germanic relatives of this world have all but died out completely, and our modern English word wicked has taken from the old English word wicca. Then it passed through Middle English as wicke, meaning akin to evil. Eventually, through the passing of time, the masculine form of wicke took shape as a distant ancestor of our modern English witch, which we use today. This is related to the modern German's Wehen, meaning to consecrate. And even to our English word victim, signifying someone killed in a religious ritual. So the world's underlining connotations is of a priestess. Modern Germany also, with the word hexe, meaning witch, that's where we get our modern English word hex, or to jinx from. A lot of these words ultimately trace themselves back to Celtic origins and to the Germanic tribes of the Angles, the Saxons, and the Jutes of prehistoric documentation and written records. As you can now see in this conspiracy of embedding ancient pagan beliefs into our vocabulary, into our history, and into our, really, our daily life. And it's been going on a long time. Who's to stop it? Gonna quit Halloween? This has been A View from Space on Talk Radio AM 640. Coast to Coast is next on Space and...